TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
10-5, touchdown!
All the time. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening live at tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my usual friends, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Ezra, welcome back. You were off last week. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Welcome to you guys, everybody. Welcome to everybody who's listening. I'm glad to be back.
Apparently you're drunk based on that introduction as well.
No, you know I've been sober for 3 years.
Maybe more like 3 hours is more accurate. Anyways, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have a jam-packed 3 hours for you this afternoon, coming up in about 30 minutes' time. From the You Can Play Project, Patrick Burke is going to join us. It's a great project regarding homophobia in sports and eliminating homophobia in sports. Yep. So Patrick's going to join us to talk about that. Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien just filmed a PSA for that, so we'll talk to Patrick about that coming up in about 30 minutes' time. A little bit later on in the program, 1 o'clock, TSN's draft expert Craig Button is going to join us. At 1:30 this afternoon, we're going to be joined by ESPN.com draft expert Craig Saunier, I'm not 100% sure which, we'll figure that out, is going to join us to talk about the draft as well. And then at 2:30 from Hockey Prospectus, Corey Pronman is going to join us. Pretty much here's how it's going to work. We're going to go general hockey for the first hour. Then our special Illegal Curve NHL draft preview will be from hours 2 and 3 today here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Richard Pollock, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much. Let's get started with the Winnipeg Jets. They had really for the first time in a number of months now, since the end of the season,
mm-hmm.
They've had some news, and they made some news this week. The first bigger piece of news, if I may call it that, is the re-signing of Jim Slater to a 3-year contract worth $4.8 million. Let's start there, and then we'll move into the Perry Pern news as we go through the rest of this segment. Jim Slater, it was a key performer for the Jets in that he was their best face-off guy.
Mm-hmm.
When the team didn't trade him at the trade deadline, was that a sign to you that they expected to get him back under contract?
Yeah, I mean that's what you would have assumed at that time. If they weren't going to trade him, they had hoped and that they were going to sign him. And the truth is if they hadn't traded him and then hadn't signed him, they would have blown it because you need to turn a player into an asset if you can't bring him back. So the fact that they re-signed him is something that you would probably have assumed when they didn't deal him at the deadline, even if they thought they had a chance at the playoffs, which they had a shot, but they didn't have a great shot. They bring him back at a 1.6 a year. Depends on what role he's going to play. Last year he played a third line role. I think out of those two line mates that he plays with, Thorburn and Glass, he's the best of the bunch. He does bring that face-off element, Drew, as you mentioned. Probably the best hands of the bunch, although that's not exactly difficult. But, a guy who can play third line, probably more comfortable in a fourth line role, but a guy who can play third line with probably stronger line mates, 1.6 a year, it's not going to cause too much trouble. I mean, if you're playing 1.6 a year for a fourth line center, maybe it's an issue if you're up against the cap kind of team. But if you're working within a budget with a little bit of leeway, I had no issues. I thought it was a good re-signing. I thought it was a comfortable spot probably for both the player and the team. 3 years, not too much of an issue.
Yeah, Richie, you touched on it, earlier when they decided not to trade Jim Slater at the trade deadline. They basically wanted to keep him around, and I think it's a great signing to keep him around for 3 years. Obviously, with with the naming of the GST line with Jay Richardson and all.
Hang on.
It didn't take very long, huh?
Who had over under 4 minutes for Ezzy to drop that in there?
No, but, you know, in all seriousness, though, we've been a big fan of those guys. They're a hardworking energy line. They're fan favorites. And yet you have to bring Jim Slater back. And you know, we're told that Tanner Glass is going to be re-signed, you know, pretty soon.
Well, no, it's interesting. If you read, you read Tanner Glass's tweets, he spoke to a local media member,
yep.
And he said that he thought they were 80-85% of the way done. And then our colleague Gary Lawless wrote about it, I believe it was either yesterday or Thursday.
Yep.
He wrote about it talking to Chevy, and Chevy put less of a positive spin around it. So I wonder if, you know, Tanner was maybe playing through the media to try and get the Jets to come up a little bit in terms of the price they want to pay for him.
I mean, what's Tanner Glass going to command on the open market? Not much. So the Jets shouldn't be that worried. If he hits the open market and somebody overpays him, let him go. And if not, hits the open market and they realize that they probably have as good of a chance to sign him as anybody else, then they'll re-sign him.
I like
Tanner Glass. I think he brings a good character element. He can kill penalties and all that stuff, although the penalty kill on this team is terrible anyways, so I'm not sure how good he is in the penalty kill. But he doesn't have great hands. He's aggressive. He can hit and do all that stuff. That's great. But
at some point,
I like Tanner Glass. I think he'd be a nice re-signing for the team at a reasonable contract. But let's not get crazy here. I mean, Patrice Cormier can do his job for cheaper and maybe just as effective. So you can't fall too much in love with the player here, even though he does bring some nice elements. He'll drop the mitts and things like that. And you bring him back at a reasonable salary, but you're not paying Tanner Glass over $1 million here,
no.
As far as I'm concerned.
Well, you can't. You can. He made $750,000 last year, $750,000.
Yeah.
If he wants a raise,
$850,000, $900,000.
Yeah,
$900,000 maximum.
Mark my words, and you can play this back. Within the next 2 weeks, he'll be signed.
I don't necessarily doubt that, Ezzy. I just don't think you should be giving him over $1 million.
You can't.
Sure.
I don't think you can.
I mean, that's...
It's a fourth-line left winger. You can't give him over $1 million.
Sure.
I wouldn't
argue with that, but, you know, whether or not he'll sign is not a debate. He is going to be signed.
Slater can move up to the third line. Glass can't.
If anything, Glass can probably drop down to a press box seat. I mean, I think if the team was honest with themselves, they'd rather see a guy like Patrice Cormier fill that role on a day-in, day-out basis than Tanner Glass, necessarily.
I think that's probably
true. Because Cormier's got a higher upside. I mean, we know what Glass is going to be. We know his maximum output on the ice.
I can break down. I mean, Glass is a little bit more physical in terms of hitting. He's a better skater. Cormier is a little bit more of that dirty guy, pesky guy, gets it on the forecheck, not as smooth of a skater. They both don't have the greatest shots. Cormier is a better face-off guy. Cormier will score his goals from in front of the net and kind of mix it up a bit. He's got a little bit more offensive talent than Glass. Not a ton more, but a little bit more. And he's cheaper, younger, and, you know, he can draw some penalties too. Yeah.
He had 16 points last year in 78 NHL games.
That's just it, right? And that's the thing.
And that's his career high. In the NHL.
Exactly.
So,
that's the whole point.
The truth is, if they give him $800,000 or $900,000, you could argue that, you know, why does he deserve a raise because he scored, you know, because he got six more points and probably significant more ice time than he's ever had before?
You don't give him over nine.
You can't. I mean, even nine is pushing it. I mean, you can't go wrong giving a guy nine in the NHL because
it's
pretty much the minimum. But, you know, if you're Chevy, and I mean, this team, you know, you could go back and say, we'll give you 2 years at $750,000 and you should be happy to get it because you got the 2 years guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the truth from Tanner Glass's perspective is on any other team in the NHL last year, he's probably not playing this many minutes.
No question about it. You're exactly right.
And he could still only put up 16 points.
Yes.
So, I mean, that should tell you, and I'm not criticizing the guy.
They're putting in defensive roles.
But we're being honest about him.
A lot of that's penalty killing. He's not playing the power play, but yes, exactly.
I mean, exactly. He's never before, and he never again, should really play a third-line role in the NHL.
No.
I mean, if we want the Jets to be good, if the GST line
is... Same for Thorburn. I mean,
if the GST line is still the third line in the start of the September 2012...
It's trouble.
This team is not going to make the playoffs again.
Right.
It's pretty straightforward at that. And that's not an insult to Glass or Thorburn or Slater.
No, not at all.
I think they would probably themselves admit it. You know, they know their limitations. They know where they're best suited to play against.
Slater's the only guy who can jump up to that next line.
And if
he needs to be insulated with good wingers if that happens.
And if the team wants to be really good, Slater's not the third-line center. On a really good team, you know who the third-line center on the Winnipeg Jets is?
That's exactly what.
It's Brian Little.
Yeah. Maybe, depending on how you want to utilize your third line, yeah, that's true. But yeah, you talk about third line, but Jarrett Stoll, third line on the Kings, good faceoff guy, more offensive capabilities than Slater. The Devils, your centers are if you're playing Elias Weber, your third line center is like either Henrik, Zajac, and Elias, whoever you're going to play in those lines. Those are your three, or Zubris, those are your three centers. So the teams that make it far last year, Boston with their depth up the middle with Bergeron and Krejci and Kelly and Campbell last year, Vancouver, Kessler, Sedin, Mahout, so. Yeah, it's a strength up the middle is generally speaking how you're going to be building a winner in this day and age. Pittsburgh with Stahl and Malkin and Crosby,
yeah.
And Philly, you can go on and on. Philly with Giroux, Briere,
the top Couturier, line. The top line teams have tremendously talented people playing
so
the third line.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, so I mean, we'll see. I mean, we don't expect the Jets to be a top NHL team just yet, but we need to do. We still need to keep our expectations in check.
Yeah. And you would have got more for Slater than you would have for Glass at the deadline.
Yeah.
So it's good that they signed him.
Well, the truth is, I mean, what's Glass going to get you if you trade him at the deadline?
Yeah,
maybe a fifth or a sixth.
Fourth or a fifth. Yeah.
Yeah, at best. The other news from the Winnipeg Jets camp earlier this week is the Jets have hired Perry Pern as an assistant coach.
Yep.
Along at the same time, they extended the contracts of all the other assistant coaches. Perry Pern's been a guy who was treated terribly in Montreal last year.
Mm-hmm.
Been around the NHL for, two decades at this point in time. Knows the hockey game inside and out. I see no real drawbacks to making this hire for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's never a bad idea to have more eyes, more opinion, experience. A guy who's been on the bench with Jacques Martin for many years. Obviously, he has some Winnipeg ties. I believe he was at the Rangers for a while there.
Yeah.
He... known for as a guy who can work on the special teams and well respected. Again, an experience too. You have Pascal Vincent down there, did a nice job, but you add another experienced set of eyes as you have Huddy there. So it's a nice mix.
A set of eyes and also kind of a fresh perspective because the Jets did struggle and didn't improve in their special teams, and Perry Pern obviously has the familiarity with Chevy. And coached him, actually.
Yeah, that was a bizarre. They coached him when Chevy was playing in the under-18s or something.
Yeah, so I think it's a good hire. He's a very well-respected guy at the junior level, NHL level. Now they have the extra coach. At times the power play really did help them at home, and then it hurt them on the road. Yeah. And the penalty kill was both bad on the road and at home. So
what's interesting too is a guy like Perry Pern is a lifelong assistant. No threat to Noel to take his job.
Right.
I think that's important.
I think you're right. And, you can never go wrong bouncing more ideas off an expert. Everybody's got to play within the same salary cap. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got the same amount of money to play with in terms of their salaries. Mm-hmm. But there's no restrictions on the number of assistants
you
can hire and off-ice advantage you might be able to get by having an extra experienced set of eyes looking at your team.
It'd be interesting, it'd be interesting if we could ask John Tortorella while he only has one assistant.
Jets are going to have three.
Well, they won't. I mean, one of those guys will be...
But they'll have three. No, they'll have three.
We don't expect all four of them to be on
but
the bench.
But Tapp had three last year. Why not have three? I like that idea.
Well, I mean, if you read the press conference or the conference call, Noel said, we just didn't have enough time to hire that other assistant coach in the, hullabaloo that was last season getting ready for it. But they made the determination throughout the course of the year that, yes, we want another set of eyes to watch over this team.
Well, even as he and I went down to watch games at UND, and they have, one of the, I think it was Western Michigan, they had two coaches on the bench and then one guy upstairs sitting beside us and has a view from the bench. They have a mic and they talk down to the assistant coaches.
They're wearing headsets. Exactly,
yeah,
right. I would expect, and they weren't sure how it was going to work out, but logically I would think that Pascal Vincent will move upstairs to the press box, and you would think Pern and Huddy would be next to Noel on the bench.
It's interesting. I mean, I guess so, although if you're a guy like Pascal Vincent, you're a younger coach, then you want to get your hands-on experience behind the bench, don't you?
But if he's in charge of the special teams, wouldn't you want a bird's-eye view to see how your special teams is actually performing as opposed to sort of being an ice level for that?
I'd be interested to see how that works. If I was Pascal Vincent, I wouldn't be too happy about that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, explain that. You want to be down in the...
Aspirations of being a head coach in the National Hockey League, I'd assume, especially at his age. So if I were him, I'd want to be on the bench and I want to be interacting and I want that hands-on perspective.
You'd want to be in the trenches more
Absolutely.
Than you would anything
Absolutely.
Else.
Yeah.
Well, we're speculating. We certainly don't know how that's going to play out. And the Jets, and frankly, I mean, Coach Noel said he doesn't know exactly how that'll play out. They'll determine that as they go through the offseason and get a better feel for one another.
You know, Drew, back to the coaching staff that they've assembled with Claude Noel, Charlie Huddy, Pascal Vincent, Perry Pern, then you go down to Wade Flaherty. You know, they've developed a really good coaching staff here, and we know that this team is still going to be young next year, and it's still going to be young the year after, and this is still a new franchise, right? They didn't bring any of the coaching staff from Atlanta,
right?
And, you know, you've got a lot of experience there, and I really like this hire. We obviously weren't happy the way Perry Pern was treated with, his let go, in Montreal with Jacques Martin, but I imagine when Chevy had a chance to hire him, you know, he jumped at it. And, you know, it's really important that they have this group of coaches together. There's a lot of experience. There's a lot of different voices, varying degrees of experience. You've got Pascal Vincent coming from the QMJHL. You've got Claude Noel, who obviously came from the Moose and before that was with Hitchcock and all that as an assistant in the Columbus. You've got a nice mix. And I'm very confident that this is a type of group that's going to work well together and it can stick together for a little while.
I have some concerns about, and I like the idea of three coaches, but you just have to make sure the egos are in check.
Well,
right. I'm saying there's big egos. I'm not saying there's big egos on the staff. I'm just saying when another guy comes in, that means some other guy's responsibilities are cut down a bit.
But it's interesting, you know, Noel said he didn't have any relationship with Perry Pern, but both Huddy and Vincent had a relationship with Perry Pern.
Right.
Vincent, when he was with the when he was coaching in the queue, went in and picked the brain of Perry Pern for 3 hours.
That doesn't mean anything, though.
Well, they have a relationship. They knew each other.
Hours. I mean, they met for 3 hours. I mean, they didn't spend day in, day out together.
Admittedly.
So, you know, he knows them.
Right.
But, I mean, it comes down to it, and then, you know, you're sitting there, and maybe you do get bumped up, or maybe you do have a perspective, and you don't like the idea that somebody else's is different, and you don't agree with it. It's just more personalities in there. I like the idea of three coaches. I'm just saying there is a little bit of risk in terms of somebody being off-put by the situation.
Time will tell how it works out. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Evander Kane and where he scores his goals from. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday afternoon in Winnipeg. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. We've finally reached the dates that we've been talking about for a while on this program. Next week from, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, if I'm not mistaken? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Alonzo Bowden.
The man.
Back at Rumors Comedy Club for four very special nights.
Burned me for being friends with you, Drew, which wasn't the first time I've been burned for being friends with you.
Understandably. Well, I mean, I'm sure there was other reasons why he burned you, but anyways.
Alonzo Bowden. Your birthday, right?
That was Drew's birthday.
I don't think it was a birthday
Somebody's
thing.
Somebody's birthday, I think.
I thought you guys...
It was a birthday.
Was it a birthday?
Yeah.
Okay, anyways.
I think it was your 45th.
Ah, might have been, yeah. It was a couple years ago. I can't remember that far back, as it were.
Is Alonzo Bowden going to be at the Y dinner, too?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check on that.
Okay. I'm surprised you invited me to go with you.
I'm regretting it immediately.
I thought you would have invited Richard over me, to be honest with you.
I invited both of you.
Are you going?
No, I have baseball.
Yeah.
So on Tuesday or Wednesday?
It's Tuesday. You have your Uncle Sammy's 65th birthday.
So that's right. Yes.
So, Richie, I'm basically going to that Y dinner as basically I'm a Passover guest.
No, there was two tickets I had available, and I offered one to Richard and one to Ezra.
Who took the other one that I didn't take?
I think Sheldon got rid of it somehow. Or Sheldon took care of it. Sheldon slash dad took care of inviting somebody.
We're going to see Mark Messier, Drew.
We are going to see Mark Messier.
We're going to see Sheldon Mindell, too.
Can you stop talking? Alonzo Bowden, Wednesday through Saturday at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Visit rumorscomedyclub.com for your tickets or give them a call at 488-4520. Get them early because they will certainly sell out. He is that good of a comedian starting Wednesday through Saturday at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Richard, in your latest large article for IllegalCurve.com, you did in-depth doesn't even do it justice, an in-depth evaluation of Evander Kane's goal-scoring prowess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll turn it over. You know, what did you discover about how Evander Kane scores his goals for the Winnipeg Jets last year?
I thought it'd be interesting to look at all his goals this year. He scored 30 as a 20-year-old, which has not been done very often in the history of the National Hockey League, and I think that needs to be pointed out. You know, where he scores from, because you always hear fans say, oh, you know, Evander Kane, Yeah, he's good, but it's always a but. But he only has one move. He only goes wide, or he doesn't really pass. He only goes wide down the boards on the left side, or only tries to make a deke around the right defenseman. And you know, while it's true that he seems to be limited somewhat in his moves on, you know, with speed down the wing, people nitpick. And sure, he does that, but he's also 20, and he'll have more moves, and he'll get stronger, and maybe even faster. And you know, if he's limited in that regard, it doesn't mean that he's not a productive player. And so I wanted to look at, like, where is he scoring from? You know, is he being shut down from his with speed down the wing and not producing goals? And in reality, it was interesting to take a look at actually where his goals were scored from. So maybe, Drew, we want to start with goal location. And by location, I mean in the offensive zone, what side of the ice is he scoring on? Because he's a left winger. But he moves around a lot in the offensive zone. And you know, generally speaking, teams in the NHL, they like a flow. They like some movement. They don't really mind. You know, left winger can move. It's not like Gordie Howe, you know, stick to your wing. Left winger can move to the right side and vice versa. So what I discovered is, in terms of if you cut the offensive zone into three parts,
right,
the left side, middle, and right side.
Yeah.
He scored 12 goals from the left side last year as a left winger, but 12 from the right side.
Which means defense have to look for him. They can't just focus on him as he's only going to be on one side of the net. He's going to be anywhere on the ice.
And we'll talk about his wrist shot a bit later, but because the right side, he's on his off wing, he's able to score
right
even more easily than he would sometimes from the left side when he's receiving a pass.
Sure.
And when he receives a pass and he can whip the puck with his wrist shot on his off wing, very dangerous.
Well, let's talk about that. You mentioned wrist shot because of his goals, 23 of his goals came off of a wrist shot.
That's right.
Zero of his goals came off of a slap shot.
He doesn't even attempt slap shots for the most part. I can remember maybe count on one hand how many times the guy took a slap shot last year, and that's fine.
Which is so, really a throwback to a guy like Joe Sakic.
Yeah, Joe Sakic, you know, yeah. Jaromir Jagr really doesn't take a slap shot unless it's on a one-timer off his back foot. Sidney Crosby doesn't take many slap shots.
That's not a bad thing, because you can get rid of a wrist shot a lot quicker than you can get rid of a slap shot.
You can also control the location of it as
right.
well.
Right, and you know, I'll let Richie continue here, but you know, I've always been a huge fan of the wrist shot. A guy, you know, speaking of Mark Messier, he had a pretty good wrist shot too off the wing.
Uh-huh.
But you know, that is a shot.
Do you ever remember seeing Mark Messier take a slap shot?
No.
Neither do I.
But you touched on it though. The thing with the wrist shot, and that is a dying art. The wrist shot, first off, you get more controlled speed in addition to just controlling where the puck goes.
And what Evander Kane does on that point is that he's so good at shooting while at full speed. That's a talent. A lot of players can't do that at full speed in motion. He's right. very good at that. So he scored 23 of his goals on a form of a wrist shot. The other goals were scored by a combination of, you know, batting a puck out of the air, tip-in.
He scored one off his body and four backhand. Those are dirtier goals from right in front of the net.
Deeks and, you know, just flipping. Quickly back to just the location. He scored 12 from the left side, 5 from the middle, and 12 from the right side, okay?
Yeah.
Pretty good distribution for
equal opportunity threat.
And of course, and that exactly. And now that people will say, oh, that adds up to 29. There's also one goal that was scored from the neutral zone on an empty netter. So that's a 30, okay? Back to quickly before we get even more in depth of the wrist shot, goal location. You know, so we cut the ice into three parts, you know, left, middle, right. Then you cut the ice horizontally, two parts.
Hash marks and above the hash marks and below the hash marks.
He's a double threat.
Right.
He can score below the hash marks, because he goes to the net. That's an underrated part of his game. He goes to the net, he takes a beating, he'll engage. Scored 21 of his goals below the hash marks, but a good scorer and a guy with a great shot also can score from above the hash marks. He can snipe.
Right. And he scored 9 of those 30 goals from above the hash marks.
You know, on the topic of Evander Kane coming off the half boards, you know, we've talked about Evander Kane and how he's the most skilled guy on the team, and obviously he's an RFA and he's a big signing to come for Chevy and Zinger. Evander Kane, to me, is a guy that I think, looking ahead, because he is just turning 21 years old, right?
It's crazy. It's crazy to think that.
When he adds a real power play element to his game, because he can come off the half boards and has a good wrist shot, as opposed to the type of guy like a Stamkos, who they're going to set up for that slapper on the circle, face-off circle, then there's a reason why this guy has been projected to be a 40-goal scorer.
And then
you're going to start to see him pop in 10 more goals
every year.
He scored
3 goals off the half boards last year with a wrist shot like that. Remember, he didn't play. You're talking about a guy, that's why I say he's the team's best player. He played second line. He played second power play. At the end of the season, he never got on for a 5-on-3. played limited minutes considering his talent, scored 30 goals, and missed a couple games. I mean, that is impressive.
And on that topic, too, yeah, it's funny. He missed a little bit of time, and there was that, you know, the problem in December or whatever. But Kane went through two long scoring droughts last year, December, and then I believe it was around March or February, towards the end of February. I think you've got it here. No, it was actually December, and then a little bit later in the season. And so if you consider those scoring droughts, and sure, a little bit of time missed, he really had a productive year. It was a tough year for Evander Kane.
He played 74 games, so he missed 8 games last year.
8 games. He played second line, second PP. Didn't play with that many with very talented players, frankly. I mean, Bermistrov and Wellwood, I think, were the majority of his shifts were those guys. I mean, not second liners on any other team. Think about it that way. As I said in the article, not Getzlaff and Perry, like he played with in the World Championships. He could have had, you know, this guy could very easily get 40 next year. And then you look at how he scored the goals, Drew, and, you know, we talked about the location, talked about how in terms of the shot, but how the actual plays. And it's a variety. Rebounds, scored 4 rebound goals last year, 4 on scrums. Again, goes to the net. 4 2-on-1 goals. Blake Wheeler and him show some nice, their speed together, which is why I like them playing together. Yep. Their speed together was able to pressure the other defense, and his speed backs up the defenseman. And if he plays with somebody else with speed, they can really be dangerous. He had a tip-in we talked about. He scored on one-timers on the side of the net.
Yeah.
Talked about the half-boards. He really can score in a variety of ways. Yeah. So he doesn't score in just one way or two ways. The guy's multifaceted in terms of his offensive arsenal. I realize people don't like the one or two moves he has at the blue line.
Right.
He'll work on that. We're nitpicking there. People are nitpicking.
Richie, based on your analysis, and I know we got to go to break really quickly, and I think it's a fantastic read. You got to go on Illegal Curve. Check that out.
Remus will tweet it out right now via our Twitter page,
Curve. This shows you how diverse of a player Evander Kane is. Sure, and when you're that fast, he's one of the fastest guys in the league. And when you see a guy that's fast, sure, there's going to be a lot of times when he's stopped because teams are going to respect his speed. But he's the type of guy that Richie touched on, and you know it's right. He gets a lot of goals, a lot of rebound goals. He gets a lot of...
The defenseman has to play back off of him because of his speed. And even when the defense is playing deep on him, he can snipe it in the net.
Exactly,
so he's
right,
a dual threat.
Exactly,
and he's the Jets' best offensive player, and it's not even close.
I agree.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Patrick Burke from the You Can Play Project. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
We are Stevie Ray Vaughan there. I like that.
Sorry. Okay. We're
Stevie Ray Vaughan's awesome.
Expecting to hear from Patrick Burke of the You Can Play Project any minute now, so we'll be looking forward to speaking to Patrick about that. It's really a great cause that he's put together there, and we'll talk about to him. The two Winnipeg Jets have just signed on to the project filmed their public service announcement. That's Tanner Glass and Dustin Bufflin. You can check it out at the website youcanplayproject.org.
We were watching it before the show, Drew, the PSA, the most recent one, and Ryan Kessler
in there as well. Yeah.
And you know they're really well made videos, and you know it's getting a lot of hype. And I've read that junior teams are now asking to be involved. The LA Kings want to get involved, you know, obviously fresh off the Stanley Cup. And people are now contacting Patrick Burke, when we talk to him about that, wanting to get involved, seeing other guys getting involved. And it's a tough subject, homophobia in sport. It's real. It's been a huge problem for a long time. And, you know, this is a really great initiative. The way they're going about it is very straightforward. I really like the angle that they're taking at it. You know, and it's going to be really good to talk to Patrick Burke about it.
Yeah, exactly right. I think we have him.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the You Can Play Project, Patrick Burke. Patrick, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Patrick, for our audience members who may not be aware of the project, can you give us the background towards it?
Yeah, so the idea is the You Can Play Project is our mission to end homophobia in sports. It comes from my late brother, who was openly gay, and we lost him tragically in a car accident. And since that time, we tried to pick up where he left off. So the idea is we've got all these metrics for measuring athletes, whether it's goals, assists, you know, whether you do the advanced metrics, whether in other sports, it's touchdowns, whatever it might be. We've got lots of ways to measure athletes and what they contribute. Let's remove sexual orientation from that list. Let's stop judging athletes based on their orientation and let them play. If you can play, you can play.
Patrick, what's the response been like in the hockey community?
It's been overwhelming. Everyone is, now we're at the point where NHL players are calling us and asking us how they can get involved. The other day we had, I was just sitting at my computer, and the Plymouth Whalers of the OHL had filmed with their players their own PSA and just sent it to us, put it out on Twitter. We didn't ask them for it. We didn't call them. We didn't beg them. They sent it in. So athletes now, specifically in the hockey world, are lining up to get involved and really, really trying to find new ways to embrace the project.
Patrick, you mentioned the Plymouth Whalers, and I mean, they're obviously a junior team, and, sort of intolerance, or, you'd hear it from, teenage boys, the slurs, oh, don't be so gay, things of that nature. What does it say to you that a team filled with teenage hockey players mm-hmm. are coming on board this kind of project and sort of, lifting off the veil of homophobia and removing it from their dressing room?
Well, it shows that the younger generation, not to sound old, I'm only 29, but it shows that the younger generation gets it. That the next group of young athletes coming up is, and there are lots of surveys and numbers to back this up, they're way, way more accepting of LGBT equality and gay rights in general than even my generation, or especially the older generations. So for a lot of these guys, it's a non-issue. They might use words, we call it casual homophobia. It's people using words like that's so gay. And they don't mean it necessarily in a homophobic sense. They mean it as, don't be uncool, or, I don't like that, whatever it is. And we're just trying to teach them where the issue with their language lies and why it's a problem to say that's so gay when you can say something else. And the intimidation for a gay athlete in the locker room who hears those words, why we need to get them out. And the younger generation gets it.
Patrick, recently Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien of the Winnipeg Jets filmed a PSA for the You Can Play project. Did Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien approach You Can Play, or did you approach them and ask them if they wanted to be involved with the project?
We emailed every NHL team asking for players, and we asked specifically for Big Buff to be involved, and he was happy to do it. We wanted, for obvious reasons, we wanted well-known guys, character guys. And I happen to think that Dustin Byfuglien plays the game with a great amount of joy. I really enjoy watching him play hockey because I think he has fun out there. When we originally launched, there was an article in one of the Winnipeg papers in which Tanner was quoted as being openly supportive. After we saw that, we called him and asked him to be involved, and he was more than happy to do it.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Patrick Burke from the You Can Play Project. Patrick, you mentioned Tanner Glass, and I mean, Tanner is certainly more of a, quote, role player in the NHL, a guy who's not afraid to drop the gloves. When you're approaching NHLers, are you looking for a deliberate mix of, say, the goal scorers and then the gritty guys so that, it's a all-encompassing project?
For sure. We wanted to take a mix of players by position, by ability, everything like that, so that young gay athletes can look up and say, okay, if you're a really skilled hockey player, you can look up and Claude Giroux and Steven Stamkos have done You Can Play PSAs. If you're a really gritty center, Ryan Kessler's done it. If you're a fighter, Tanner Glass, George Parros, Brandon Prost have all done it. If you're a defenseman, Byfuglien, Chara, Weber. If you're a goalie, Lundqvist, Price, Elliott. Whatever you are, you can find someone who's supporting you.
Patrick, your dad, I just saw him actually recently on an interview, he's really made a point of having making a difference, not just in the hockey world, but just culturally and in general. He's used his position with the Toronto Maple Leafs to make a difference both, locally and nationally, internationally. What do you take from that? Like, how much is his leadership, how much do you play off of his leadership, and how much has that been the force behind this this project?
He's been a wonderful help. Every time we need something, he's happy to do it and everything like that. But it is. He's a great example of what athletes or those of us in the sports community can do when we step up on something. Sports is such a great way to break down cultural barriers. Mm-hmm. On the ice, no one cares anymore if you're black or white or hopefully soon, no one cares if you're straight or gay or anything like that. It's just hockey. It's just sports. And when we, you know, speak out, people, if young athletes want to be like older athletes, they copy right. the celebration. They tape their stick the same way as a guy. A baseball player copies the batting stance of their heroes. And now their heroes are telling them, first of all, to the young gay athletes, they're telling them, it's okay, I've got your back. And to the straight athletes, they're telling them, hey, you know, be supportive. You're supposed to be supportive. It's good to be supportive. And that's really going to have a huge impact, I think.
Patrick, you know, a lot of people will say that, you know, if more athletes would come out, you know, that would definitely help reducing homophobia in sport. And obviously, you know, athletes in the past have. It's not really common in the hockey world. You know, when do you think, you know, professional hockey, I know it's a tough question to ask, but when do you think, you know, we're going to see a professional hockey player feel comfortable enough, you know, that they can come out and say, you know, that, you know, I'm gay?
I've said before publicly that I think it will be within the next 2 years. I know a lot of people who disagree with me, including people in our own charity. I think it's within the next 2 years we'll see an openly gay NHL player.
Patrick, we'll let you go on this last question. What's in the near future for the project? I mean, more PSAs, or is it going to, you know, are we going to take? Is the project going to take another, you know, evolution and a next step?
Hello,
still there, Patrick?
I don't have you guys.
Nothing. Can you hear us at all? Looks like we may have lost Patrick. Well, we'll have to send him an email and abruptly cutting that short. Patrick Burke from the You Can Play Project joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do NHL news and notes. Welcome back to the show. Patrick Burke was nice enough to call us back after it looks like we dropped the call. Patrick, are you there?
Hey, guys. Sorry about that.
No worries, Patrick. Well, we're going to let you go on this one final question. The future of the project, you know, what's coming up in store that people can look forward to? How can people get involved in the project? All the good details of this great cause.
So anyone who's curious or who hasn't seen our videos or might have missed one can find all our videos and everything like that at youcanplayproject.org. They can help us spread the word. We're on Twitter at youcanplayteam. We always appreciate people sending our videos out and showing their friends and everything like that. Going into the summer, we're going to be expanding into more sports, men's and women's sports, to get even more inclusion of all the different sports and age groups. And for people looking to get involved, we're going to have some ideas for that, too. We're hoping to update the site soon so that fans can upload their own You Can Play videos and show support in that way. So. We're grateful for the support we've had from fans so far, and we look forward to seeing more of it.
Absolutely terrific. A tremendous project, the You Can Play Project, available online at youcanplayproject.org. Patrick Burke, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks so much for having me twice.
Thanks, Patrick.
Take care, Patrick. Thanks very much.
See you guys.
Take care.
Great cause.
Great cause. Just, I mean, you know, you can't say enough about it. And it is heartwarming to see how enthusiastically it's been endorsed by the NHL community.
That's great. I mean, it's and it needs to have that sort of reception and that sort of support. And you can't, and this, a cause like this, you can't quietly support. You have to be vocal about it. And you made such a good point in terms of the way you look up to, and you made the point, Drew, too, about the Plymouth Whalers. Because you started at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you ingrain it in the players, in the youth, in the young players, that is not acceptable. And that behavior and the way he was talking in terms of things you're saying isn't acceptable. And it's acceptable to be whatever you are. And so when you start it at the youth level, it's two-pronged. Because the young players feed off of the NHLers, as he mentioned.
Absolutely.
And also the young players need to be taught it within their own dressing rooms. Exactly. And they get the message from both sides, and they know it's acceptable.
Yep.
Yeah,
and they know that within their room they can be accepted, and that their heroes accept it. I think, and you know what? It's obviously we shouldn't even be talking about whether it should be accepted or not. But
right.
You need to get the word out. And Patrick Burke obviously yep. spoke very well about the cause, and his dad's doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean,
they're carrying on their brother's legacy. I mean, it's you can say what you will, and get back to, you know, Brian Burke. About the job he's done, and we've made a point of this on the show, saying it's exclusive from the job he's done in terms of raising awareness
yep.
of this issue and any other issues in Toronto. He isn't just using his spot as president and GM of the Maple Leafs.
He's using his bully pulpit for really good causes
yeah.
above and beyond strictly
exactly
being
right.
the hockey operations face of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You can have your opinion on him and his moves, and he's been a successful general manager, whether or not you agree with his success, I mean, agree with his tenure in Toronto. It's irrelevant to the issues and to the progress socially that he's made within his role and from that platform that he's had.
For every young hockey player to who may or may not be in or out of the closet, mm-hmm. to watch the Gay Pride Parade in yep. Toronto and mm-hmm. see Brian Burke mm-hmm. watching, walking, marching, a guy who preaches nothing but truculence and everything else. It is, must be such a heartwarming feeling to know yep. that you have that sort of power yeah,
well,
on your side.
You might talk about the truculence, but these issues aren't. They aren't mutually exclusive.
No, they're certainly not.
Exactly, and that's the point I think he's making, is you can be whatever you are and still yep. be truculent. And
if
the perceptions the stereotypes are just so ridiculous
yeah.
that he's putting them to bed.
If and you can play, you can play. It's pretty straightforward, it's pretty simple, and it's not preachy. We're going to evaluate you based on your talent on the ice,
yep.
and nothing else matters.
And, Drew, it's very important we're having this conversation. It was a pleasure to have Patrick Burke on.
Boy, does he sound like his dad.
He sounds like his dad.
Oh, man.
And, he's a very well-spoken guy. And, in this day and age, we were having this conversation before the show started this morning. This is the year 2012. And it's long overdue. And we're in the day and age where, it's not acceptable anymore to judge people by their sexual orientation. It's just not acceptable. And you have to, respect people's decisions. And it has absolutely nothing to do with, your ability to play hockey, whether that's a physical brand or just playing the game in general. And this is I really, truly respect this initiative. And I think I speak for everyone. And, the Burks are a powerful hockey family. And you're right. When a guy like Brian Burke, in the biggest city in Toronto, it's a very powerful message. And, I truly respect what they're doing. And it's important to have Patrick Burke on our show and other shows and have guys like Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien get into it because this is a problem. It's in this day and age, it's still a big problem. And you're right, Richie. You want to affect the young players. And, that's why when Don Cherry is often on CBC is talking, he's talking to the kids. Kids out there, don't get your sticks in the way and help your goalie out and respect your teammates and don't taunt the other team. I mean, these are important things. Little 6-7-year-old kids are going to watch their Jets, Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien, and they're supporting a cause like this. They're going to grow up in that culture. And the hockey culture has changed. It's just not acceptable anymore, to judge people based on their sexual orientation. So it's a fantastic project. And, it was a pleasure to talk to Patrick because obviously he's busy and, I really appreciate that.
For the draft.
Exactly. Absolutely a project we're proud to support here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
NHL news and notes.
Big trade last night. Really, I think in my books it probably resolves a fair question regarding Tampa Bay's goaltending situation. They acquired Anders Lindback from the Nashville Predators in exchange for 2 second-round picks, plus a little bit more. I mean,
third
I'll open up.
Too.
There was a third rounder in there. There was they traded. I think Garon went back to
yep.
Went back
Caron.
To Nashville. Caron, pardon
yeah.
me. Sebastian Caron went back to Nashville in the trade. Is Lindback going to be the answer for the Lightning?
It's a good question. I mean, that's the $64,000 question. Drew, I think it's a good risk for both teams. Risk, really. I mean, you're giving up 2 seconds in the third. You have a lot of draft picks if you're Tampa.
Yeah.
You need to solidify your goaltending situation. He's a big netminder. He was never going to surpass Pekka Rinne, especially after Pekka Rinne signed the new contract. So he was expendable.
Right.
Nashville turned him into three assets, the 2 second-rounders and a third-rounder. Team that generally drafts well, that hasn't been drafted as well lately. You're going to give, it's going to end up in cheap talent, they hope, for Nashville. And Tampa has a lot of picks, and they need to address their goaltending. It was a huge liability, as Guy Boucher was saying when he was in Winnipeg this year. He wholly admitted that the team has a goaltending issue. So Lindback is a younger netminder. Big guy, takes up a lot of room.
6'6".
Pretty athletic.
Rene's big, too.
They
had 13 feet of goaltenders in Nashville last year.
And I think he's going to be an upgrade. He's certainly going to be an upgrade of what they've had the past couple of years, aside from Rollison's run at the end of the season before last.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you're not giving up a first-rounder here, which is probably what it costs to get Corey Schneider, if not a little bit more. And you've done it quietly, and you haven't spent a whole lot of money, and there's nothing really not to like. I mean, he's cost-controlled, Lindback. He's not going to cost you that much cash, And you see what he turns into, and you didn't give up a first rounder.
If you're Nashville, I mean, Nashville had previously traded their first round pick and their second round pick in this draft in order to acquire Paul Gostad and Hal Gill. Yeah. Now they get those two picks back, so you know, from the Nashville perspective, you're happy. From Tampa's perspective, it definitely takes them out of the Roberto Luongo running.
I don't think they were ever in it either,
but you know, it definitely does. Andrews Lindback's an RFA. So you're going to have to sign him,
Cost-controlled because he's an RFA with not much leverage, Drew. He hasn't performed as an, you know, they're probably going to try and sign him to a 2 or 3 year deal at around 1.5 or 2 kind of thing. And if he performs, great. And if he doesn't, he doesn't cost them too much. It's a win-win for me.
It's win-win when you consider that, you know, Nashville's going to bring in Jeremy Smith as their backup and Pecorine has the long-term contract. But, you know, Richie, I know that you're a big fan of Stevie Y, and I am too as a player and as a GM. And you stockpile those draft picks, and then the biggest question mark was in goal. I like Lindback. I mean, yeah, sure, you know, everyone, you know, it's all about numbers, right? And sure, numbers are important. His numbers weren't fantastic, but he was playing a backup role, and he's not...
His numbers in the NHL this year were quite good. 16 games played, 2.42 goals against average, a save percentage of .912.
Yep.
I mean, the risk...
That's all right.
The risk is minimal, and the payoff could be quite good. He's 24 years old.
Absolutely.
That's exactly it. I mean, this is a good move by two good GMs. That's what it is.
And the thing with the Tampa Bay Lightning is, Richie, and, you know, the goalie market, we know how basically wild and depreciated it can be. You address this now, you focus on the draft. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning have a lot of good pieces there. Victor Hedman still got a lot of room to grow, but you know, on forward, obviously they're just absolutely stacked.
High end talent.
They have a very good 1-2-3.
Yeah, I mean, Lecavia is not what he used to be.
Right, but I mean,
they have a good 1-2, and St. Louis is almost 37, I think. So
I'll take a 37-year-old St. Louis any day of the week.
I know, I agree, but I'm saying, you know, a couple of years down the road, Lecavia is worse than he is now, getting paid a lot of money. St. Louis is all closing out on 40. And, you know, Stamkos and Hedman, but they don't have as much talent, I think, as people think right now.
Another guy who was set to become a restricted free agent on July 1st was Mason Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
The Vancouver Canucks filed for arbitration, but for the very rarely used cut-down arbitration, which allows an arbitrator to reduce Raymond's salary from last year by as much as 15%. Frankly, I didn't know that there was a provision for this even in the CBA. I don't know of any other time it's been used.
I hadn't heard of it before that.
Yeah, so I mean, what's going to happen is the Canucks will retain his rights on a one-year contract, and it'll go to arbitration, and really Raymond has to fight to prove to an arbitrator why he shouldn't have his salary reduced for this coming NHL season from $2.6 million up to the lowest it can drop now is $2.21 million. You know, a 15% drop, cut in pay.
I hadn't heard of it before this.
It's very bizarre. I mean, it seems to make logical sense. I mean, Mason Raymond did not perform for 2 points.
Remember, he came off that back injury from the year before, though.
He was injured. I mean, but if you're Mason Raymond, I mean, he had 20 points in 55 games last year.
Yeah, I mean, coming back from injury, he wasn't great. But, yeah, I mean, I think you have to take into account the fact that he broke his back the year before.
Admittedly, but, I mean...
People thought he'd never play again.
He had a very serious back injury.
Tactically speaking, if you're Mike Gillis, and Lawrence Gilman, you're using the CBA and those tactics to your advantage financially. You're going to be a cap team, and they're always right up against the cap with very little room to move, and they utilize their resources in the right way. Having said that, it may cause some strife between the player and the organization, and I think Raymond's a guy they'd probably deal anyways if they could. So
even though this clause is very unused, it's essentially the same as regular arbitration. His salary could still go up. It won't because of his production.
His salary could go up, yes.
But it'll most likely go down by the 15%.
You would think
arbitration is somewhere you don't want to go with the player, generally speaking.
No, I mean, wouldn't. Generally speaking, you wouldn't. But I mean, I think it does show to some extent that the Canucks might have some hope still for Raymond to be able to bounce back to what he was prior to his back injury, where he had a very good year.
Can he become unrestricted? No, he's restricted next year.
He's restricted. Well, no, he was set to be a restricted free agent.
But next year, is he unrestricted?
Next year when? Like after this coming season?
If he signs a one-year deal, he's unrestricted after that, right?
It depends. I mean, I think...
How old is Raymond, 26?
I haven't looked into it. I don't know how old he is.
I'd have to check on that to see if he would be unrestricted after that, depending on how many years of service and how old he is at that point. That would be the answer to that question. Yeah. But for this next year, Mason Raymond is likely to make less money than he made last year, and the Vancouver Canucks
got to... arbitration should work both ways, too. I have to read more into that.
Into the clause?
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly an interesting clause. I'm trying to think of any other situations where it could potentially have been used before. I mean, you know...
Mason Raymond is 26. So after this year, he will be a UFA.
You know what? You know,
27. He'll be a 27.
I like Mason Raymond. He was with the Moose, and, you know, he obviously had the injury problem last year, but very fast guy. He's got a good shot. You know, he can get physical once in a
very
while.
Good skater.
It's a worthwhile move for the Canucks as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, why not? I mean, after this, he's a UFA anyway, so...
You know, exactly. What's the worst case scenario? You pay a guy 1 year and $2.15 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he performs for over that, bonus. You know, there's very little downside
they
from
need
a Vancouver.
To improve their second line, though, and I'm not sure. I think they want to improve upon a guy like him.
I would agree. I don't think they want
probably
him in the second line role.
Probably the right wing role, though, because they have David Booth in the left wing. They should probably have high hopes for him, especially with his contract. So they're going to be, you know, putting a guy with Booth and Kessler, both guys who are more shoot first players, not pass first players. You're probably going to look for a playmaking right winger there.
Well, and we'll find that out coming July 1st, which is only about 10 days or 2 weeks away from now. 2 weeks tomorrow, in fact.
Right.
Anyways, let's go to break. From here on out, it's all NHL entry draft. When we come back, Craig Button from TSN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.